WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 11th of May, 2022. My name is Arthur. I haven't been here for the last couple weeks for a couple of various reasons. And it just seems like I haven't been here for a long time, the way things are going this morning. I wanted to get back to kind of the classic grand hour, the radio detective show, the first half. This week I'm going with the Green Hornet. I'm playing off a record, so I don't have the original air date. This one's titled A Question of Time. Thanks for listening.
The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reid, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reid in the thrilling adventure, A Question of Time. The Green Hornet strikes again.
Came down unceasingly, and to add to the eerie darkness of the night along the waterfront, a heavy mist had risen, and it swirled and eddied about the long black car, which, moving like a sinister shadow, finally came to a stop alongside a deserted waterfront building. A tall, shadowy figure stepped from the car. It was the dreaded figure of the Green Hornet, who stood listening intently for a moment, then spoke.
Come on, Cato. We'll take a chance.
You think they set trap for Hornet, perhaps, Mr. Britt?
It could be. That's why we came here half hour ahead of time.
Will Black Beauty be safe here in secluded place?
Yes. Leave the car door open for a quick getaway. Come on. We'll go to the end of the dock. It isn't very far.
What do we find there?
We're supposed to find a motor launch there. The time was set at 9 o'clock. I'm hoping it'll be there ahead of time.
The police sure to come soon, Mr. Britt.
Yes. That's why we came early. Hard to see anything. I think I see the outline of a small boat now.
Oh, I see something. It could be the boat we can... Shot come from boat at end of dock, perhaps.
Yes. Come on.
Boat leaving.
Yes. We're a little too late.
No use for us to... Oh, look, Mr. Britt. Outline of launch still there.
Yes. That was another boat leaving. Come on. Here we are.
We go on board?
Yes, follow me. Use your flash, Cato.
Yes, sir.
We'll look in the cabin. Come on.
Be careful. It's dark down in there. Maybe someone waiting there.
I'll risk it. Flash your light around.
There not seem to be anyone... Man, lie on bunk.
Don't move, you. Bring that light here.
Man, look like he...
He's dead. Shot through the head. Let's see. Great Scott! This is Stuart Ludlow, the man who was...
Boat coming, Mr. Britt.
I hear it. Maybe the killers are returning.
It police boat.
Let's get out of here fast. logs lifted a bit.
Police cars come, too.
Doubtful is right.
Quick, we'd be trapped. What do we do?
It's a short distance back along this dock. We've got to get back off it before they reach it. Come on. Now, run for it. We've got to make it.
They see us in a moment.
Head for the Black Beauty. Here's the Black Beauty. I'll drive.
Hurry. They're coming. We have very narrow escape, Mr. Britt.
You can say that again, Cato.
And now Green Hornet be blamed for murder of man on launch.
That's right, he will.
We'll leave in such hurry after you come from office tonight. You not tell me why we go to dock. Well, how you know launch be there?
Of course you read in the Sentinel about Stuart Ludlow, the man we found murdered on the launch.
Oh, yes, sir. It say he was assistant to Professor Santos, a scientist from South American country who come here during the war to do secret work for government. Ludlow reported missing since last night. Also, certain secret formula missing.
Right. Professor Santos gave out the report, and he suspected Ludlow of stealing the paper. Early this afternoon, I was in the city room at the Daily Sentinel, discussing the case with Gunnigan.
Well, I guess that guy Ludlow beat it off with those secret papers, all right, Chief. Goes to show you don't know who to trust.
Well, could be, Gunnigan. Yet it's hard to believe Stuart Ludlow would do a thing like that. He received a citation for his brilliant work in scientific research during the war.
Yeah, but according to Santos, they'd hit on something big. Ludlow probably thought he could sell it to spies or something.
Maybe, but I still...
Hey, how are you, Gunnigan? When do you hear the news I got this time?
Did they find Ludlow?
No, but I got...
Maybe the secret formula thing turned up.
No, I'm kidding, but I got...
Oh, well, then, man alive, Mike, don't stand there quibbling. If you really got some news, let's have
something
it.
Something says, Gunnigan, will you give me a chance to stop popping off before I get two words out of me mouth?
Calm down, both of you. What have you found out, actually?
Where did he hear, Reed? I was at cops headquarters a while ago when they got a printed note having to do with the Ludlow case.
A printed note?
Yeah.
What did it say? Did you get a copy? Was it from
Keep
the right...
Keep your short on, Gunnigan, will you? Of course I got a copy. Took it down word for word. Listen to this.
Well, hurry up, read it.
It says... Ludlow stole the formula and is selling it for big money. You can catch him red-handed when he turns it over to the Green Hornet tonight in a motor launch at 3rd Street Dock at 9 tonight. Huh. Then he'll use the launch for his getaway. Signed, one who was double-crossed. What do you think of that now?
Jumping catfish. So the Hornet's mixed up in this.
At least that's what the note says. Are the police planning to close in on the Maxford?
Sure. And believe you me, I'm going to be right with him. Sarge wants this kept off the record, Reed. So as not to tip off Ludlow and the Hornet.
What? You mean that we have
Sergeant
to keep...
Sergeant Burke is right, Gunnigan. We can't print that news about the note until after they have a chance to act.
Oh, I suppose not. Have they notified the professor about it?
Nope. Nobody knows but the cops and us. So keep it under your hat.
We'll keep it quiet, Axford. After the police go to the dock tonight, phone me about what happened. I'll be anxious to know. The reason I came home and then went to the dock is the Green Hornet, Cato. You know the result.
It looked like someone definitely planned to kill Ludlow on launch. So police find body and blame Hornet.
Right. That someone very cleverly planned to make it look as though the Hornet murdered Ludlow and took the formula. And so far, he got away with it.
With not good.
That's true. But the Green Hornet won't take it sitting down, Cato. I won't rest until I found that killer, no matter what it takes to do it.
Green Hornet, police find body.
Here you are, lady.
Hornet escapes with secret
papers.
Here you
are, sir. You want it, boys?
Read all about it. Set the electricity paper.
It was almost noon of the following day when Mike Axford entered Britt Reed's outer office, where Lenore Case, secretary to the young publisher, was busy at her desk.
Hey, Casey. How are you doing?
Oh, good morning, Axford. Or should I say good afternoon, perhaps?
Oh, one or the other. It's all the same to me.
That's right.
Evidently, time means nothing to you, the way you come strolling in when you feel like it.
Huh. Is that so now? I'll have you know I put in a full day's work this morning, that I have.
Doing what, for instance? Dunking donuts in your coffee?
Look, if I want a dunk, I'll dunk, and it'll still be none of your business, as I. But if you must know, I've been over to Professor Santo's place with Sarge and a couple of the boys.
Oh. Well, maybe I was hasty in what I
Ashford,
said.
Ashford, I've been waiting for you.
Oh, hello, Reed. I was just about to go into
your... I know. You were just about to come into my office. Well, Gunnigan said you went over to Professor Santo's place this morning.
That I did, Reed. You see, it is known that the professor owns a cabin cruiser. Sarge thought maybe Ludlow used it to meet the harness at the dock last night. But Santo's boat was still in the boathouse.
I see. Then they still don't know who owned the launch in which Ludlow was killed.
Nope, they're still checking. No doubt it was stolen from someone who reported missing before long.
Maybe. So Santo's owns a cabin cruiser, eh?
That he does. But he hasn't had it out at the boathouse in over a month. And he's the only one who has a key to get into it. He says he hasn't even been inside the boathouse.
Did you see his cruiser, Axford?
Sure. We all went to the boathouse. Sarge wanted to check, you know. Tis a fine cruiser Santos has there.
Did Sergeant Burke do any checking at all to make sure the cruiser hadn't been used last night?
Oh, sure. Of course, he wouldn't question Santos' word. But then he did find that the gas tank was empty, and the back deck was covered over with the canvas and things stored away, so it was easy to see it wasn't used.
I see.
Well, what's the cruiser like, Axford?
Oh, it has a sort of deck business behind, and then a glassed-in cabin in the middle. Then off that, at the front, through a little door, there's a couple of bunks for sleeping. All as cozy as can be.
Gunnigan told me you went over there at 9 o'clock this morning. Where were you all morning? It's noon now.
Well, see, Reed, it was like this. I got left behind on the cruiser, that is.
Left behind? Well, how did that happen?
Yes, what do you mean?
To tell the truth, Reed, I snooped into that little bedroom where their bunks were. Well, just to see how comfortable they were, mind you, I sort of laid down on one of them while Sarge and the others were talking outside.
Oh, Michael Axford, don't tell us you went to sleep.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
Oh, I might have known.
You mean the others went off and left you there asleep?
That they did, Reed. Sure, and I got the start of my life when I woke up and got a look at the little clock on the wall up over the bunk. It pointed to 11 o'clock.
Well, Axford, what did you do?
And I got off the boat and pounded on the door of the boathouse till the professor heard me and came down and let me out. Guess he thought I was a dope. He didn't seem to like it a bit. And I got me jalopy and highballed it over here.
Well, it's funny Sergeant Burke didn't miss you.
Oh, he knew I had me own car there, so he probably didn't give it a thought. Anyway, we didn't find out anything.
I suppose for a moment you thought that clock on the cruiser was wrong when you looked at it, eh, Axford?
You said it, Reed. But I checked with me own watch and found it was right after all. So I sure lost no time getting out of there.
Oh, Axford. You know, that's about the dumbest thing you've ever done. Lying down and going to sleep while you're out investigating.
Okay. Go ahead and laugh, because I got it coming. You know, Reed, it's an open and shut case against the Green Hornet. We know he double-crossed Ludlow by murdering him and making off with the secret paper. Sure, and this is one time the cops are up against a killer who's too smart to be caught.
Oh, well, you never can tell, Axford. Sometimes the smartest of killers can overlook some little detail that will open the way to his capture. Something tells me Ludlow's murderer will be caught sooner than he or anyone else expects.
We'll continue our Green Hornet adventure in just a moment. After hearing Axford's story of his visit to Professor Santos' cruiser, Britt Reed did some serious thinking. At dusk, he left the Sentinel building and went to his apartment, where Cato, his Filipino valet, was preparing dinner. Britt immediately put through a phone call to Professor Santos.
Hello?
Is this Professor Santos speaking?
Yes, this is Professor Santos. Call him, please.
I'm Britt Reed, publisher of the Daily Sentinel. Well, I called to ask if you've heard anything about part of a message scratched on the wall panel of the launch by your assistant Ludlow just before he died. It might have been done by a pin or something like that in an effort to tell just who it was that killed him.
Just a moment, Mr. Reed. You say poor Ludlow. Ludlow leave long enough to strut some sort of marking inside the launch?
Well, now, perhaps I shouldn't have brought it up. Naturally, I thought if he had done something like that, the police would have told you. But then I guess they would keep it quiet about any clues they might have found.
Yes, of course. Have you any idea just what might have been scratched on that wall panel by Ludlow?
No. As I said before, if they found any such markings, the police have kept it more or less a secret. Of course, being in the newspaper business, we hear a lot of things that aren't actually...
But after all, the police don't need clues. The Hornet killed Ludlow.
Well, that seems to be the consensus of opinion, Professor Santos. I thought I'd check with you anyway on the rumor I've heard.
I'm sorry, Mr. Reed, but I've heard nothing about it.
I see. Well, thank you. If I get any definite information about it, I'll call you again.
I wish you would, Mr. Reed. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Professor. Cato.
Yes, sir?
Come here, will you?
Right away, Mr. Brent.
Hurry. Forget about dinner. We have a job to do.
What are we going to do?
The launch on which Ludlow was murdered is still moored at the 3rd Street dock. But since the police are convinced the Hornet killed him, they've left it unguarded.
What about launch? You hope to find a clue, perhaps?
No, Cato, not exactly. But I do hope to leave something which someone else might mistake for a clue. We'll go down there right now.
You go out as Green Hornet?
Yes. Let's go.
Place seems to be deserted, Cato.
You certain police not leave guard?
Well, that's what Axford said. There's really no reason why they should. Wait here. I won't be long.
Moving quickly through the darkness, the Green Hornet made his way along the dock, and after pausing to make certain he wasn't observed, he leaped lightly to the after deck of the murder launch.
So far, so good.
Quickly, the shadowy figure went into the boat's cabin. A short time later, he emerged, and in a few minutes, reached the side of the Black Beauty.
Now, Cato, we'll do a bit of watchful waiting.
Well, what do we wait for, Mr. Britt?
I'm not positive, Cato, but I think that launch will have another visitor tonight.
We wait more than half hour now, Mr. Britt. But no one come.
I know I'm on the right track, Cato. We'll just have to be patient and wait a little longer.
You expect a certain man to come to lunch?
No. But I do think someone will show up sooner or later.
I hear a car coming.
Yes, I see it. It's going right to the edge of the dock. That's the one we're waiting for, Cato.
Oh, big man get out of car. He go toward lunch.
Yes. The moonlight shows him up pretty well. This isn't a figure of anyone I've seen before.
What do we do now?
Wait right here until he starts away in the car. Then we'll follow.
Where do you think he'll lead us?
To the man responsible for Ludlow's murder.
Look, the man stay on launch only for a minute. He's coming back to car now.
Yes, but he was there long enough for the purpose. He's getting into the car. This is it, Cato. All right, get started, Cato. Follow that car.
Well, Carl, come in. Go into the study.
Professor, the game is up. You'll have to clear out with me.
What? Then there was something on the cabin panel, eh?
Yes, he must have scratched it with a pin. Letters spelling your name, Professor. S-A-N-T-O-S.
But that is your fault. I told you to be sure he was dead.
But I could have sworn he was dead, Professor. I told you so when I got back into your cruiser to get away.
Carl, it's strange that if the authorities saw that marking on the panel last night, they haven't come here to question me.
That's the way the American authorities work. They let you think you're not suspected till they put all the facts together. Then, they walk in, take you away. Where did you hide the paper containing the formula?
In a slit in the mattress on one of the bunks in my cruiser. Carl, we have to make plans for leaving here. What's the matter?
Quiet. Thought I saw someone outside that window. It's open a little. They heard anything.
See anyone, Carl?
No. Yes, I'm a little chompy. There's only one thing to do, Professor.
What is that?
You'll take your cruiser and go down the bay. The ship I'm to sail on tomorrow night is anchored down there. It can be arranged for both of us to go to board tonight.
Yes, we'll do that. If we wait longer, they may put someone out here to watch.
We must not be caught, Professor. We'll both hang for murder if we are.
You were the one who killed Ludlow.
But you planned the whole thing. And you piloted the boat that took me there.
All right, so all right. I'll pack a few things and then we'll leave in my cruiser. Once we're on that ship, we'll be safe.
Meantime, Cato joined Britt Reed, who stood waiting near the door to the boathouse.
Did you phone the police as I told you to, Cato?
Yes, sir. I tell them murderer of Ludlow go out in Professor's cruiser tonight. They think I'm in Green Hornet, perhaps.
Yes. Well, I'll use a skeleton key on this door and we'll board the cruiser. I overheard enough to know the missing formula's there. I'm certain they'll try to use the cruiser for a getaway.
You keep them from taking boat out?
No. I want them to get out on the water. There'll be less chance of one of them escaping. Come on.
A short time later, Professor Santos and Carl entered the boathouse and boarded the cabin cruiser. And within a few minutes, the boat was backed out into clear water.
That's far enough, Professor. Now swing it around and head down the river towards the bay. Stay close to the shoreline.
All right, Carl. The job has been botched, Carl. I hope to continue on here in this country with further scientific research.
Best to get out while you can, Professor. They would have caught up with you sooner or later. And think of all the money you get for turning that formula over to us. Listen, Professor.
I hear it. Must be police boats.
You see, they did suspect you.
Don't worry, Carl. I have special auxiliary motor on this cruiser. We can lose them readily.
Switch over to it then. I'll get the machine gun from the toolbox there.
Get away from that toolbox.
Hey, but the...
Look, Carl, in the cabin doorway.
Green Hornet.
White colors.
Why, I'll show you.
Tough condition for a good shot, Dope. I'll settle you.
I don't dare leave the wheel, Carl. Don't let him...
Don't let me what? Do this?
No! Stay away from me. We'll all get caught.
Come here, you.
I take wheel.
You, Professor, can take this.
No. No, I... Gas, I can't breathe.
Shut off the motor, Cato. Leave this paper with a formula pinned to the Professor with a note man.
Police boat coming fast.
Yes, the shore's close by. We'll have to swim for it, Cato. When they board the cruiser and fly these two, a little grilling will make them squeal. Let's go.
Later, in Britt Reed's apartment, he and Cato, in dry clothes, we're discussing the events of the evening.
What you do at dock tonight, Mr. Britt?
I scratched Santos' name on the wall of the cabin on the launch. I told you about my phone call to the professor just before we went to the dock.
Oh, yes. Then what you tell him over phone, make him send to see if Ludlow really leave clue.
That's it, Cato. And then we...
Reed! Have we got news this night?
Axford and Sergeant Burke.
Axford asked me to run him home in a squad car. His jalopy busted down.
Well, glad you came in. What's the big news?
Reed, what do you think? The cops got a tip off that the murder of Ludlow was going to go out in Santos' cabin cruiser.
Really? The Green Hornet, you mean?
No, it wasn't the Hornet, Mr. Reed, though we thought that's who we'd find. It was Professor Santos himself with a Nazi underground spy.
What?
That's right. Santos came too. He'd been gassed by the Hornets, you see, and before the other guy could talk, Santos had spilled the whole works. And we found the secret papers too.
But why he tried to steal his own formula?
Cato... He was going to get a big dough from some Nazis in South America for that formula. He couldn't sell it openly, so he had Ludlow murdered, then accused him of stealing the papers. We got the whole story.
But Oxford says something about the Green Hornet. Was he on the cruiser?
Nope, not when we got aboard. But stuck right on the clock in the bulk room was a Hornet seal. On the clock, mind you.
Yeah. Believe me, that professor was a smart one, sending that fake note to headquarters saying the Hornet was going to meet Ludlow at the 3rd Street dock. In that way, he had us thinking the Hornet killed Ludlow.
Oh, well, the Hornet was mixed up with him. Well, just a question of time as to when he'd pull a double cross.
Sure. And it's only a question of time before that spalpeen makes a slip and gets himself caught. To my way of thinking, he's too smart for his own good.
You can say that again, Sarge. But stop at the words too smart. That's what I think of the Hornets.
Well, have it your way. I got to get back to headquarters. See you again, Mr. Reed.
Wait, I'm coming with you. So long, Reed.
Goodbye.
Mr. Britt, I not understand how you're so positive Professor Santos involved in case.
When Axford told me about going to Santos, he gave me a clue, Cato.
What'd he tell you?
Axford fell asleep on the cabin cruiser in Santos' boathouse. He said when he awoke, he noticed the time on a clock near the bunk. The time indicated by his own watch was just about the same.
But how'll that tell you anything?
Cato, they don't have electric clocks on motorboats. Santos swore to the police that he hadn't been near his boathouse in a month, and therefore hadn't used his cabin cruiser. Yet that clock was running and keeping time.
Oh, so that is...
Right. Somebody had wound that clock. So I knew Santos had been lying since he had the only key to the boathouse. He had used his cabin cruiser only the night before. And as Axford so aptly put it, the solution of the case really was just a question of time.
Popular radio dramas created by George W. Trendle are a copyrighted feature of The Green Hornet, Incorporated. All characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious.
That was Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee, mixed in with a Green Hornet episode. No, that was the actual, that was the music that the Green Hornet used. Its companion show, or sister show, or the Lone Ranger. I forget what they used too, but the Green Hornet originated in Detroit and on WXYZ. You heard that, copyrighted by George Trendle. He was the creator. He also created the Lone Ranger. And I can't think of what the Lone Ranger's music was now. Either way, they were known for their classical music. My name is Arthur, and you are listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Let me go ahead and fulfill a FCC obligation.
Wake up and text. Text and eat.
Mm-mm.
Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Sorry about that. I can't hear myself here for a second. Sorry. It's been a couple of weeks. Thank you, Ad Council. For the second half of the program, I'm going to play a Western. This is one I actually found in the WMFO vault. I didn't even know this radio show existed. Death Valley Days. Don't have really any information on it. It's just simply one of these albums that you find that the record label put out in 1975. So I don't have a title of it. Well, I'm really doing good this morning, aren't I? Anyway, we'll go ahead and take a listen to Death Valley Days. Thanks for listening.
As the old morning bugle call of the covered wagon trains fades away among the echoes, another true Death Valley Days story is presented for your entertainment by the Pacific Coast Borax Company, producers of that famous family of products, 20 Mule Team Borax, 20 Mule Team Borax Soap Chips, and Boraxo. Well, old ranger, what's your story about tonight?
Dresser, it's a story about one of the worst bandit gangs that ever operated in the Southwest. And how the Texas Rangers finally cleaned them up, lock, stock, and barrel.
Oh, a cleanup story. Well, that fits in perfectly with my announcement. For where there's any cleaning up to be done, 20 Mule Team Borax will do it quickly and easily. Take the bathroom, for example. The tub, wash basin, chromium fixtures, mirrors, tile or linoleum floors, all can be kept spick and span with 20 Mule Team Borax. And since 20 Mule Team Borax doesn't contain soap, it cleans without leaving any soapy film or gritty sediment. And you'll find 20 Mule Team Borax just as helpful in the kitchen, too. A little Borax and a damp cloth will help keep your refrigerator fresh and sweet-smelling. In fact, all your food containers, bread and cake boxes, chopping bowls, pantries and cupboards, should be washed regularly with 20 Mule Team Borax and warm water. Of course, 20 Mule Team Borax has many uses in the laundry, the nursery, and in all parts of the house. That's why so many housewives depend on 20 Mule Team Borax to help them with all of their cleaning. And that's why they always keep a supply of 20 Mule Team Borax on hand. One package in the kitchen, another in the bathroom, and a third in the laundry. With spring cleaning almost here, you'll want to take advantage of the extra help 20 Mule Team Borax gives you. So next time you go shopping, get a supply of 20 Mule Team Borax. Thank you. And now, old ranger, let's get back to your cleanup story.
Well, Dresser, this is the true story of Sam Bass, sometimes called the Robin Hood of Texas. But I want to say right now that Sam Bass was no Robin Hood. He wasn't much different than any modern gangster. He started out with the same chance to be an honest American citizen, but he ended up one of the most feared train robbers in the whole Southwest. The strange part of it was that in his youth, Sam Bass was nicknamed Honest Eve and had a job working for Sheriff Dad Egan of Denton County. But later, he fell in with Joel Collins and his gang and started robbing stagecoaches. But popular belief to the contrary, they found there wasn't much money in that, so they decided to hold up a Union Pacific train. On September 18th, 1877, Joel Collins and Sam Bass, with four more companions, rode into Big Springs, Texas, about sundown. That night, a few minutes before old number four was due to come puffing into town, the six train robbers was ready for it.
Here she comes, boys. Hey, Sam Bass.
What is it, Cap?
Have you got that station agent's hands tied up good?
Sure have.
All right, boys. See that your bandanas is tied good and firm. We don't want no one to see our faces.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, mine's on good and tight.
Mine, too.
Now, don't forget, every man has his work to do. Me and Bill will tackle the engineer and fireman. Jim and Tom, what's your job?
We'll grab the conductor and then stand guard while you bring up the engineer and
that's
the fireman.
Right. Sam, you and Jack got the most important jobs. You got to get into that express car where the gold is.
Don't worry, Cap. We'll get in if we have to tear the door down with our teeth.
All right, boys, scatter. Here she is. Now, give her some hot lead, boys.
All right, station agent. Remember, if you cross me, I'm going to put this gun right down your throat. Which is the express car?
The second one.
All right, come on. Jack, push your gun in this ribbon. Make a move.
Oh, don't shoot. I'll do whatever you say.
All right. Now holler in at that express messenger. Tell him to open the door.
Hey, Charlie. Charlie Miller. Open the door.
Who is it?
It's me, George Barnhart. Open up.
What was that shooting outside?
Well, that was nothing. A couple of the boys were a little high.
Tell them you got a package.
I got a package for you, Charlie.
All right. I'm opening up.
Put up your hands and keep them up.
What the devil?
It's a holdup. Get up there, Jack.
Get off this car. I'll... Oh.
Don't hurt him, Jack. He's got to open that safe for us.
Hey, did you get that express car open?
Yeah, it's open. Come on, help look for money. Here, give me a hand, Jack.
Hey,
thanks. See any money?
Not yet. Where's your money, agent?
I ain't got nothing valuable with me.
You wouldn't lie, would you? Hey, what's this? Look, Jack, safe is open.
Chucks, this is like taking candy from a baby.
Hey, look there. Paper money. Must be $400 or $500.
Oh, did you find anything, Sam?
Sure, climb in.
I'm coming.
Look, Cap, safe is open.
Yeah, that safe's no good. Here's the safe we want to get into. This is the through safe from San Francisco. It's probably full of gold.
Open that safe, you coyote, before I let a big chunk of daylight through you.
Hurry up about it, agent.
I can't open that safe. It's got a time lock. It won't open till it gets to Omaha.
Don't give us that kind of stuff. Open that safe.
On my solemn word, I swear I can't open that safe. Here's my papers to prove it.
What's he talking about, Cap?
I'm going to shoot him in the leg.
Wait a minute. Don't hurt him. He's telling the truth. These papers show that safe is locked for keeps. Can't open it. So let him alone.
Hey, wait a minute. What's in those three boxes? Hey, you. What's in those boxes?
I don't know. Probably lead casting.
Oh, we'll see about that. Hey, Cap, give me a hand.
Yeah.
This box is heavy as a house.
All right. Lift her up and drop it. That ought to crack it.
Well, I'm a ring-tailed monkey. Look, Cap, it's $20 gold pieces.
Grab those boxes and let's go, boys. We're rich.
Yeah! Come on,
boys! Well, Joel Collins was right. They was rich. They got $60,000 in gold off that Union Pacific train. The only trouble was, one of the gang lost his bandana in the getaway, and F.M.F. Leach, a storekeeper who had sold it to him, recognized it. He trailed the bandits all by himself, and one night while they were gathered round their campfire, Leach crawled up behind a clump of mesquite and saw him divide the gold.
That's all of it. Divided up square and equal, $10,000 apiece.
Boys, we're on easy street for life.
Got away clean as a whistle.
Well, don't none of us be too sure of that. We still ain't out of hot water.
That's right, Sam. We all got to be in our guard. And the best thing for us to do is split up in pairs and separate.
Well, it's a good idea, Cap. Posses will be looking for six of us in a bunch. We can make our getaway better in couples.
That suits me. I'm going back to Missouri. I promised my wife I'd bring her home a hat full of gold from this country, and I'm doing it.
I'm going back to Denton County.
Me too, Jack. Got a lot of friends there, and I know plenty of places to hide out.
There's just one thing before we separate that we got to do.
Yeah, what's that?
We got to take an oath never to squeal and never to be taken alive.
I'm for that.
Me too.
All right, Sam, you take the oath first, then.
All right. Well, how do I do it?
Just say, I swear I will never reveal to anybody the names of the men who helped hold up the UP train.
I swear that I'll never reveal to anybody.
But they didn't know that even while they was discussing their plans and swearing eternal silence, the storekeeper, Mr. Leach, was listening and watching. Next day, he wired the express office in Omaha a description of the six men and the roads they'd be traveling. In a few days, three of the men was dead, shot down by posses. But Sam Bass escaped to Denton County and organized a new gang of bandits. He hid out near Cove Holler, and a farmer named Jim Murphy often bought food for Sam or give him shelter in his house in exchange for UP Double Eagles. But finally, Jim Murphy was arrested for protecting and assisting Sam and his men. They put him on a train to take him to Tyler. Some say Murphy was a yellow dog, and some say he was a brave man who risked his life to help rid Texas of a dangerous outlaw. But anyway, on the train, Murphy thought of a way he could save his own neck.
Now listen, Jim, why don't you do the smart thing and tell me everything you know about Sam Bass?
I've told you all I know, Marshal. I don't know where he is. I'm not one of his gang.
All right, my lad. I guess you'll just have to serve your time, then.
Oh, don't say that, Marshal. I want to help. Now listen, I've got a plan.
Well, talk fast. We'll soon be in Tyler, and once I lock you up, I'm through with you.
If I help the government catch Sam Bass, will you drop the charges against me and my father and brother?
Well, I can't promise you anything like that. That's up to the district attorney.
But look, I can join Sam Bass's gang. I know I can. He's looking for me. Suppose you fix it up so I can go free for a while. I'll join Bass and find out where the gang is going to stage another holdup. Then I'll get word to you or the Texas Rangers and they can capture him. If I do that, will you get me off?
Do you mean what you say? Have you got nerve enough to try a thing like that, or are you just lying to try to get away?
I'll do it. I swear I will, if the district attorney will drop those charges.
Well, I'll talk it over with him. Maybe he'll see it your way, but mind you, I don't make any promise.
Well, the district attorney agreed to the plan Jim Murphy outlined, and to make it still easier for Murphy to join Bass, they fixed it so it'd look like Murphy had jumped his bond and run away. So a few weeks after Murphy joined up with Bass and his outfit, Murphy sent word to U.S. Marshal Johnson that Sam Bass was going to hold up the bank at Round Rock. By this time, Sam and his men were camped near a cemetery outside of town, ready for the big holdup. Sam had already looked the bank over and gotten the lay of the town. While they was waiting for their horses to get a good rest, Sam, Frank Jackson, and Seaborn Barnes rode into town one day for a drink.
Howdy, strangers. What do you have?
Red Eye. Leave us a bottle.
Yes, sir. Here you are. What's yours, sir?
I'll take the same. What's yours, Sam?
Give me a cigar.
You mean you don't want a drink, Sam?
Not right now. Maybe later.
All right, bartender. Vamoose. Vamoose, we got business to talk over. We don't need your help.
Yes, sir. I guess I can take a hint. Just holler if you need anything.
Don't pour too much of that stuff in you, boys. You know, we got a job to pull first thing in the morning. I don't want you nursing hangovers.
Yeah, then you better help us empty the bottle, Sam.
No, thanks. I'll wait a while.
If you don't want a drink, Pod, why did you come in here?
Yeah. See that gal over there by the piano?
You mean the redhead?
No, no, the yellow-haired doll.
Oh, you mean that scrawny one?
What do you mean, scrawny? She's slim and pretty, and she's a friend of mine.
A friend of yours?
Sam, you ain't fell for no skirt, have you?
Will you two mavericks stop yapping a minute? This gal's all right. She comes from Indiana. That's where I come from.
You mean she knows you? We better get out of here.
What's the matter with you, Frank? You turning yellow?
No, of course not.
You sound like Jim Murphy. I ain't ashamed of who I am. I'll tell anybody who I am if they want to know.
Hey, now wait a minute, Sam. You know I'm only thinking of your own health. All Jim Murphy worries about is his own skin.
So
Hey, where is that guy?
We left him at the blacksmith's in Old Town, getting his horse shot.
Now, when you finish your drink, go out and round him up. I don't trust him very far out of my sight.
We should have killed Murphy that time at Frankfurt when we heard he was a spy.
I never believe that story. Anyway, they'll never put a rope around Sam Bass's neck. We rode right through that yellow leg ambush at Salt Creek, didn't we? This newfangled ranger outfit can't stop us, neither.
Don't forget, Sam, them cavalry fellas was Easterners. The Texas Rangers is ex-cowboys, and they can shoot.
Now, let's forget about them ranger coyotes. Now, listen, Sam, what about this yellow-haired gal? Where does she come into this picture?
Well, I met her in here a couple of days ago when I come into town to size up the bank. Heard her singing a song, and I liked her, and I liked the song. That's why I come in here. And I want you fellas to hear that song.
Well, I ain't much of a judge of singing.
Me neither.
Well, I am. And this is a darn good song, because it's about me.
Huh?
What's that?
I thought that'd make you sit up. Hey, Annie, come over here, gal.
I never knew before, Sam, that you was a music lover.
That's good. A music lover.
Hey, you're getting drunk, Frank. Watch yourself.
Howdy. What can I do for you?
Hello. Have a drink?
Okay, I'll take a beer.
One beer for the lady.
Are these your pards?
Yeah. Boys, meet Miss Annie.
Hello, miss.
Howdy.
I was in here a couple of days ago. You remember me?
I sure do. Wouldn't expect me to forget a handsome figure like yourself, would you?
You ought to see his bow legs, miss.
That's enough, Frank. Apologize to the lady for skinning you alive.
Oh, why, sure, Sam. I didn't mean nothing. But what am I apologizing for?
A gent don't talk about legs in front of a lady. You meant limbs.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, miss. I apologize. I meant you'd ought to see his bow limbs.
Never mind my legs. Limbs, I mean. You better leave that liquor alone.
If you gents are going to fight, excuse me.
Don't go away, miss. I'm sorry. Listen, Annie, you recollect that song you sang the night I was here before?
Say, I sung over 50 songs that night.
I mean the one about that hold-up fella, the one who tapped the UP at Big Springs.
Oh, you mean Sam Bass.
Yeah, that's the one. Funny I forgot that name.
You want me to sing it again? Is that it?
Sure. Would you do that? And, here's a little something for your trouble.
Oh, thanks. What? Why, this is a $20 gold piece.
Sure. You ever seen one before?
Not many. But say, you don't need to give me that for just a song.
That's all right, miss. It's worth $20 to have a pretty gal like you sing a song special just for me.
Stranger, you and me ought to get better acquainted. What's your name?
Well, that, miss, is a very personal question. Suppose you just imagine I ain't got a name.
Oh, of course, if you want it that way.
That's the way I want it. Now, let's hear that song.
Hey, Joey, pull yourself together and tackle that piano. Give me the tune for that song about Sam Bass.
Sam, I thought you said you was low on cash.
I am. That was the last of a UP gold.
Can you toss it to that gal for a song?
Sure. There's plenty more where that came from.
Yeah, that's right. What's $20?
Yeah, sure. Have a drink, Sam. Come on.
Sam Bass was born in Indiana. It was his native home. And at the age of 17, young Sam began to roam. He first came off to Texas, a cowboy for to be. A kinder-hearted fellow you seldom ever see. Sam used to deal in red stock, one called the Denton mare. He matched her in scrub races and took her to the fair. Sam used to coin the money and spend it just as free. He always drank good whiskey wherever he might be. And left the Collins Ranch in the merry month of May with a herd of Texas cattle, the Black Hills for to see. Sold out in Cluster City and then got on a spree. A harder set of cowboys you seldom ever see. On the way back to Texas, they robbed the UP train and then split up in couples and started out again. Joe Collins was his partner, were overtaken soon. With all their hard-earned money, they had to meet their doom. Sam made it back to Texas, all right side up with him. Rode into the town of Denton with all his friends to share.
Dancing over there singing, cut it short.
Hey, who do you think you are?
The young ladies are singing to us.
I'm sorry about that, and I got to talk to you strangers. I understand you're carrying guns. I'm Deputy Sheriff Grimes.
Say, you got a nerve stopping me like that.
Don't give me no back talk, Annie. I allowed once before how I'd run you out of town.
Hold on there, Grimes. You get mighty tough with females, don't you?
Seeing as how yours are free with my name, stranger, what might yourn be?
I reckon it ain't none of your business.
What's the matter? You ashamed of it?
No, I'm proud of it. My name's Sam Bass. Reach for the ceiling, Sheriff.
Sam, are you all right?
Sure, I'm all right. Is he dead?
He's dead as a doornail.
Well, I'm sorry about that. He's the first man I ever killed. But he started to shoot when I had him covered.
Look out, Sam. Here comes another deputy across the street. I can see his badge.
Get out the back door, Barney. Lead our horses around the side.
I'm on my way.
If anybody gets in your way, plug them.
Hey, Sam, did you ever see a place empty out as fast in your life? There must have been 50 fellas in here 2 minutes ago, and now there ain't nobody but the dead sheriff.
Yeah, and here comes another one looking for trouble.
You mean here goes another one.
You shouldn't have shot him like that in that bright sunlight. He couldn't see us even. We're going to have a fight on our hands getting out of this town. We've done it before, so I reckon we can do it again. Come on.
Hey, you head toward the alley, and I'll follow you backing up shooting as I go.
Sounds all right to me.
What's that?
Sounds like a bugle call. Let's get out of here fast.
Good gosh.
Look at that dust cloud down the road.
What is it? Yeller legs?
Can't be cavalry. Must be rangers.
Look out, Sam. There's a fellow with a shotgun. I got him, Sam.
You got me, too. I'm shot in the side.
Hang on to me. You'll be all right when you get on your horse. There's Barney with our horses now. Come on. I'll hold you up. We can still make it.
Thanks, Frank. I'll be all right when I get on that cayuse of mine.
What's the matter?
Sam is shot. Pull that horse steady.
Look out. Look out. It's a burn on the roof.
Easy, Sam. Up you go.
Oh, I'm hurt. Pretty bad.
You're all right, Sam. Come on. They want shooting, we'll give them their money's worth. Come on!
But Sam wasn't all right. He was dying. Barnes was shot and killed before he could mount his horse. Sam and Jackson, his closest friend, escaped out of town and outrode a posse that followed him. But Sam made Jackson go on and leave him hidden in a live oak grove. He knew he was dying, but he wanted his friend Jackson to escape. The Texas Rangers found him breathing his last. He died refusing to name any of his companions in his various robberies. 2 days later, he was buried in the town's little cemetery beside Seaborn Barnes and Deputy Grimes, who had already been laid to rest. There were a handful of men and one woman at that strange burial. One woman was Annie, the dance hall gal.
Let him down easy, boys. He's paid for his sins.
Yeah, and I gotta hand it to him. He was game to the very last.
Did you hear the Rangers question?
Sure did. They couldn't pry a thing out of him. He stuck by his pals, all right.
Yeah, but it's a good thing the state is rid of him. Those bad men gotta go. They're given. Texas is a bad name.
That's right.
Excuse me, Mr. Hobbs. Do you think the preacher would mind if I spoke to him before he says his prayer?
Well, I don't think so, Annie. Parson Withers. Annie here wishes to say a word to you before you make the funeral sermon.
Well, what is it, sister?
Well, there was a song he liked awful well. Mr. Bass, I mean. I'd like to sing it to him before they throw the dirt on his coffin.
What sort of a song, sister?
Oh, it was a song about him. And now that he's dead, I've written some special verses to it.
Let her sing it, Parson.
I brought Joey along with his guitar to accompany me. Mr. Bass would have liked it. I know he would.
Very well, sister. You may sing.
Thank you, Parson. Go ahead, Joey. Damn it, his fate at Round Rock, July the 21st. They pierced poor Sam with rifle balls and emptied out his purse. For Sam, he is a corpse now, and 6 feet under clay. And Jackson's in the bushes, trying to get away. Jim Murphy borrowed Sam's good gold and didn't want to pay. The only shot he saw was to give poor Sam away. He sold out Sam and Bond and left their friends to mourn. Oh, what a fortune Jim will get when Gabriel blows his horn. And so he sold out Jim and Bond and left their friends to mourn. Oh, what a scorching Jim will get when Gabriel blows his horn. Perhaps he's gone to heaven. There's none of us can say. But if I'm right in my surmise, he's gone the other way.
Dear Heavenly Father, we come to you today to plead forgiveness for this poor creature who lies here at our feet, broken and disgraced. We know that you, in your wisdom and everlasting...
Hey, Hank, look over there. Who's that riding in the graveyard on horseback?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd think whoever he is, he'd have a little respect for the dead.
He's heading right this way.
Now, that darn fool... Hey!
Oh! Oh! Goodbye, Sam. Here's flowers from your old pal.
Oh, Sam Jackson.
Hey, it's Jackson. Sam Bass's best friend.
And so ends another of the Old Ranger's true stories of Death Valley days, made possible by your regular purchases of 20 Mule Team Borax, 20 Mule Team Borax Soap Chips, and Boraxo. Since this started out as a cleanup program, we'd like to say a few words about Boraxo, the modern hand soap that cleans dirty hands. We're sure that every member of the family will like Boraxo because it not only helps remove all kinds of dirt, but it leaves the hands feeling soft and smooth. That's because Boraxo is a special combination of fine toilet soap and pure borax in powder form. There's no grit or caustic in Boraxo, nothing to roughen or redden the hand. Best of all, Boraxo works quickly and efficiently in any kind of water, hot or cold, hard or soft. And its rich, creamy lather gets right down into pores and creases, under fingernails, and floats out dirt. If your family hasn't tried Boraxo, get a few cans tomorrow and see how enthusiastic they'll become over this new, modern hand cleaner. Put a can of Boraxo in the garage or basement for Dad. He'll soon...
I can't listen to that ad anymore, Boraxo. That was, ...20 Mule Team Boraxo commercials with, Death Valley Day radio drama mixed in there somewhere. I'm just kidding. I don't know anything about this Death Valley Days. I wanted to play that out to see if I could... Some of the voices sounded familiar, but I didn't know... I wanted to hear if the announcer gave any credits to them, because the album that I'm playing off of from the WMFO vaults doesn't have any indication of the title, an original air date of that Death Valley Days. Well, my name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Sorry if... show is a little discombobulated this morning. It's been a couple of weeks. Playing under me is The Fuzzy Twist by Dwayne Eddy and the Rebels. I was surprised to learn he was still alive, so maybe keep this at the end of the show for a while. Thanks for listening.